The test is in four parts, part 1, part 2, part 3, and part 4. Now look at part 1.
Part 1.
IELTS practice. Questions 1 to 8. You will hear an extract from a talk about the Scottish Highlands. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 8. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 8.
Today I have with me Moira McKenzie, the author of several books in a well-known series of travel guides, and she'll be talking about what is probably the most fascinating wildlife area in Europe, the Scottish Highlands. Moira.
Yes, that's right. And it's a wonderful place to visit with lots to do in an area that makes up over half of Scotland. Including the 790 islands that lie scattered around the coast, it covers 39,000 square kilometres. Getting there is easy. From here in Glasgow, a good starting point is Fort William on the west coast, with regular bus and rail services linking the two. I'd recommend the train, which takes 4 hours to get there. Alternatively, you can take the Highland Line, which takes the more easterly route up to Inverness. That, in fact, is a bit quicker, taking around 3.5 hours to cover the 280 kilometres from here. There are also two main options by road. You can take either the A9 up through Stirling and Perth and then on to Inverness, or else on the west there's the A82, which runs up to Fort William and then, if you want, on to Inverness. Now, a lot of people associate the Highlands with bitterly cold weather, but in fact the region has a generally mild climate as a result of being surrounded on three sides by sea, particularly the warm waters of the Atlantic. At sea level in the west, for instance, the temperature ranges on average from a minimum of 1 degree centigrade in January up to 18 in July, and you can actually see palm trees growing there. Obviously, though, the temperatures will be lower inland and on higher ground. You can expect it to rain a lot too, particularly in the west, where annually as much as 2,000 millimetres regularly falls, though this helps account for the rich variety of vegetation and wildlife. When you get there, you'll find there are plenty of reasonably priced places to stay. In Fort William, for instance, you can find a room for the night in a small hotel or a bed and breakfast for just £25, or for £28 to £30 in Inverness. It's probably a good idea to book ahead, though, especially in the summer months. With all the leisure, sports and cultural activities on offer, the towns are becoming increasingly popular with visitors. For example, accommodation in Inverness won't be at all easy to find this year around the 23rd of July, as that's when the local Highland Games will take place. So, if your aim is to see the countryside, it may be best to stay in a small village. Now listen and answer questions 9 and 10. As I mentioned, there's a huge range of wildlife in the Highlands, but for those visiting the area, there are some basic ground rules that are essential if we are to protect it. Firstly, you should make every effort not to disturb birds and animals, and one way of doing this is to blend in with your surroundings. For instance, by avoiding brightly coloured garments, such as orange anoraks. To see wildlife clearly, it's best to use binoculars, keeping your distance. This is particularly important during the breeding season. Wherever possible, use a hide so that they are less likely to detect your presence. Surprising though it may seem, visitors are advised to use their cars where no purpose-built hides are available, as people are apparently less likely to startle animals if they stay inside their vehicles. You may even find that creatures come up close to where you're parked, in which case, wait until they've gone before you move off. It should really go without saying that it's essential to be as quiet as possible, though sadly, some people need reminding of this. Oh, and one other thing. Wild animals and pets don't mix, so please leave your dog at home, or at least somewhere he or she can't chase the wildlife or damage their habitat.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part two.
Part two.
You will hear a talk on New Zealand radio about an art sale which is being held to raise money for charity. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 13. Now listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 13.
One of the most anticipated art events in Christchurch is the charity art sale organised this year by Neil Curtis. Neil, tell us all about it.
Well, Diane, this looks like being the biggest art sale yet. And the best thing about it is that the money raised will all go to charity. So what you probably want to know first is where it is. Well, the pictures will be on view all this week, most of them at the Star Gallery in the shopping mall. But we have so many pictures this year that we're also showing some in the cafe next door. So do drop in and see them any day between 9 and 5. Now, if you're interested in buying rather than just looking, and we hope a lot of you will be, the actual sale will take place on Thursday evening, with sales starting at 7:30. Refreshments will be available before the sale, starting at 6:30. We've got about 50 works by local artists showing a huge range of styles and media, and in a minute I'll tell you about some of them. You're probably also interested in what's going to happen to your money once you've handed it over. Well, all proceeds will go to support children who are disabled, both here in New Zealand and also in other countries. So you can find an original painting, support local talent, and help these children all at the same time.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 14 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 14 to 20.
Now, let me tell you a bit about some of the artists who have kindly agreed to donate their pictures to the charity art sale. One of them is Don Studley, who has a special interest in the art sale because his 5-year-old daughter was born with a serious back problem. After an operation earlier this year, she's now doing fine, but Don says he wants to offer something to help other less fortunate children. Don is totally self-taught and says he's passionate about painting. His paintings depict some of our New Zealand birds in their natural habitats. One relative newcomer to New Zealand is James Chang, who came here from Taiwan 9 years ago at the age of 56. Mr. Chang had 13 exhibitions in Taiwan before he came to live here in Christchurch, so he's a well-established artist, and art has been a lifelong passion for him. His paintings are certainly worth looking at. If you like abstract pictures with strong colour schemes, you'll love them. Natalie Stevens was born in New Zealand, but has exhibited in China, Australia, and Spain. As well as being an artist, she's a website designer. She believes art should be universal, and her paintings use soft colours and a mixture of media. Most of her pictures are portraits, so watch out, some of them may even be friends of yours. And then we have Christine Shin from Korea. Christine only started to learn English 2 years ago when she arrived in New Zealand, but she's been painting professionally for over 10 years, and she sure knows how to communicate strong messages through the universal language of art. She usually works from photographs and paints delicate watercolours, which combine traditional Asian influences with New Zealand landscapes, giving a very special view of our local scenery. Well, that's all I have time to tell you now, but as well as these four, there are many other artists whose work will be on sale, so do come along on Thursday. We accept cheques, credit cards, or cash. And remember, even if you don't buy a picture, you can always make a donation.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part three.
Part three.
You are going to listen to a conversation between two students talking about a lecture they have just attended. First, look at questions 21 to 24.
Henry, don't you think Dr. Adams' lecture was really very good? He could talk about the telephone directory and make it interesting.
All his lectures are like that, Astrid. He's just one of those people. I wish we had him as our tutor.
I bet you that he is very demanding, though. Boris is in his tutorial group and agrees that he is a brilliant lecturer, but he puts them under a lot of pressure.
Don't you think that's good?
Perhaps. But I am glad to have Dr. Adams as a lecturer. He's interesting and rather funny and puts just the right amount of pressure on people.
Did you take lots of notes in the lecture?
Yes, actually I did. In fact, several pages. I didn't think I had taken so many.
I was that busy listening to what was being said that I didn't take many notes. Can I photocopy yours?
I don't think that's such a good idea. You won't be able to read my handwriting. And sometimes I write them in English and sometimes in Arabic.
Oh, let's have a look. Wow, your notes are so neat. There's not much Arabic.
There is on this page.
Oh, yes, there is. Dr. Adams would be pleased to see this, especially given what he was talking about.
Don't you keep careful notes?
Sometimes. It depends on the lecture. I don't think I'll forget Adams's lecture today, but some of the detail will fade.
Before the conversation continues, look at questions 25 to 30.
I type up everything afterwards so you can have a copy then and you can fill in anything I have missed. I'm not so good on the broader concepts. I'm better when it comes to detail.
Just what Adams was talking about.
Well, I am definitely a detail person. I need to have everything written down before I can get the concepts clear in my head.
And I am the complete opposite. I find all the detail clutters up my mind and I get very frustrated, which was just what he was on about. He mentioned a book he'd written.
He mentioned several.
The one on space and the individual?
Yes, called My Space. It's on the book list.
So it is. I think I'll get that out of the library or get my own copy.
Did you get what he said about spatial awareness? I didn't really.
Oh, yes, it was fascinating. I can't be as eloquent as Adams was, but I know several people who are frighteningly intelligent, but they have difficulty reading simple directions, even when getting to places that they know very well.
I find that difficult to understand. Everyone learns the way to walk to the shops and things like that.
You mean just the way people learn spelling? You know, people misspell words, make mistakes in countless areas of their lives, and going in the right direction is just the same. Remember what Adams said about the number of people who cannot tell left from right, north from south, and so on? Do you know which way is north?
It's, that way.
You see? I couldn't have told you that.
Really?
I haven't a clue which way is which. That's why I'm always getting lost when I go out on my bike and put me in a completely new place and I am totally lost.
What about maps?
I'm hopeless at reading them.
But then you're brilliant at writing essays and getting all the ideas down in the right order, and I don't know where to start.
Again, just what Adams was talking about. What we need to do is combine our skills. You teach me to cope with detail, and I'll teach you how to string concepts together.
Okay, we can do that.
Which way is the library?
It's... you're making fun of me.
That is the end of part three.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part four.
Part four.
You're going to hear a talk about the English policeman. As you listen, complete the notes below.
First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
The English policeman has several nicknames, but the most frequently used are Copper and Bobby. The first name comes from the verb to cop, which is also slang, meaning to take or to capture. And the second comes from the first name of Sir Robert Peel, the 19th century politician who was the founder of the police force as we know it today. An early nickname for the policeman was Peeler, but this one has died out. Whatever we may call them, the general opinion of the police seems to be a favourable one, except, of course, among the criminal part of the community, where the police are given more derogatory nicknames which originated in America, such as fuzz or pig. Visitors to England seem nearly always to be very impressed by the English police. It has, in fact, become a standing joke that the visitor to Britain, when asked for his views of the country, will always say, at some point or other, "I think your policemen are wonderful." Well, the British bobby may not always be wonderful, but he is usually a very friendly and helpful sort of character. A music hall song of some years ago was called, "If you want to know the time, ask a policeman." Nowadays, most people own watches, but they still seem to find plenty of other questions to ask the policeman. In London, the policemen spend so much of their time directing visitors about the city that one wonders how they ever find time to do anything else. Two things are immediately noticeable to the stranger when he sees an English policeman for the first time. The first is that he does not carry a pistol, and the second is that he wears a very distinctive type of headgear, the policeman's helmet. His helmet, together with his height, enables an English policeman to be seen from a considerable distance, a fact that is not without its usefulness. From time to time it is suggested that the policeman should be given a pistol and that his helmet should be taken from him. But both these suggestions are resisted by the majority of the public and the police themselves. However, the police have not resisted all changes. Radios, police cars, and even helicopters give them greater mobility now. The policeman's lot is not an enviable one, even in a country which prides itself on being reasonably law-abiding. But, on the whole, the English policeman fulfills his often thankless task with courtesy and good humour, and with an understanding of the fundamental fact that the police are the country's servants, and not its masters.
That is the end of part 4.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.